This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
From the Quicken Loan Studios in Houston, Texas. Quicken Loans. Take advantage of historic low rates. Go to Rocket Mortgage today. Here's your host, 6'1", former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome back to hour number two. We are inside the Quicken Loan Studios at the all-new SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. And as promised, we were talking about it in hour number one. It is time to shine the spotlight on the Green Bay Packers, New York Times best-selling author. He has just released his new book. It is the full definitive biography of one of the most colorful, complex, and successful quarterbacks to the game that has ever seen. It is titled Gunslinger, The Remarkable, Improbable, Iconic Life of Brett Favre, and it is so good to have with us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line, Jeff Pearlman. Good evening.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, it's good to have you on the program with us tonight. And so, you know, a number of things that I want to get into when you talk about Brett Favre, but first and foremost, I kind of break it down for us. I mean, why did you select a Brett Favre biography, and what was the process like for going about and researching for it?
All right, so it's not the pretty answer that people expect. I could just tell you, like, I've always wanted to write about Brett Favre. But the truth of the matter is, my dream book, sports book, that I always wanted to write was a biography of, there used to be a football league. Do you remember the United States Football League, the USFL?
Okay.
Yeah, so there used to be this league called the USFL.
Right.
And it was Jim Kelly, Steve Young, Herschel Walker, all these players started it.
Oh, yeah.
And I always wanted to write a USFL book. And I wrote a proposal and nobody wanted it. It was a universal no. My agent said to me, Jeff, nobody wants an effing USFL book. I was like, ah, crap. So, but I'm not one to give up on these things. So I thought maybe if I pitch it with another project and try to get a two-book deal. So I thought Favre would be intriguing, and he's a big name, and he's iconic, and there's never been a definitive biography. So I pitched Favre and USFL, and I actually did get Howard Mifflin gave me a two-book deal, but they said they wanted Favre first. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. And then I loved it. Like, I loved it. The entire experience was more fun than any book I've ever written. I just found it joyful. I think his story is amazing. His family in Mississippi couldn't have been more helpful.
Yeah.
I love it. He is a really, really rich character, like a really rich character. And so I interviewed almost 600 people, and I spent 2 years just chasing people down, and I loved it. I really did. I loved it.
You know, I think, Jeff, you're a New York Times best-selling author. Throughout the years, you've delivered some compelling reads. From a writer's perspective and view, I mean, what is, like, the criteria for some of the book topics as you select them?
That's a great question. I have three things that I always focus on. Like, three questions I ask myself before every book. This is true. Number one, has it ever been done before, a definitive biography? Like, I don't really want to write a Joe DiMaggio biography because I feel like Richard Ben Kramer did a great one. I don't want to do Lou Gehrig. Jonathan Haidt did a great one. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with doing a biography on those guys or trying to find your own take. I just don't want to do that. I want to be the guy who writes the definitive biography of someone. So has it ever been done? Number two, would my mind explode if I spent 2 years researching this person? You know, and
yeah,
I mean, I wrote a book about Barry Bonds. It was my second book. And I could not find anyone to say a nice thing about the man, right? So it became like this pursuit. Does anyone have a nice thing to say about Barry Bonds? Please, somebody, say something nice about Barry Bonds. And I almost lost my mind doing it. So that was not fun. And then number three, just because, you know, my kids like to eat, does it at least have a chance of being marketable? You know, does it have... You know, like the USFL book I was talking about is the first time I'll be writing a book where the odds are against me, where I'm going to have to do some, you know, all kinds of dancing to even get it to sell. But I thought, you know, Favre is a used name from a passionate market. So I thought I had a shot. So those are the three things I sort of look at when I think about a book.
New York Times bestselling author of seven books, Jeff Pearlman, is with us tonight at the all-new SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. His latest release, The Remarkable, The Improbable, Iconic Life of Brett Favre. It is titled Gunslinger. And you had just mentioned a moment ago, you did spend time in Mississippi. You interviewed nearly 600 folks, but you spent time in Mississippi with Brett Favre's family. What was it like being, you know, spending time around his family, but also his mom? I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, so it's kind of weird. He didn't talk for the book, and for a long time I thought he would. because I had interviews arranged with him, phone interviews arranged, and then they were canceled and arranged and canceled, and ultimately he didn't talk. And simultaneously, I basically did something on a lark. Not on a lark, but on a whim. I made a Facebook friend request with his sister, Brandy. And she responded, you know, accepted my request. And then I was in Mississippi doing research, and I sent her a direct message over Facebook. Hey, I'm in Mississippi. Any chance you want to grab coffee? And she wrote back and said, well, why don't you come to the house? And I was like, oh, that's great.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, really good. A serendipity, you know. And I drive to the house, and it's where Brett grew up. And she's there, and Brett's mom, Benita's there. And, you know, it was kind of, at first, you know, they're like, well, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I'm trying to write a definitive biography. Has Brett agreed to talk to you? And I go, no, he hasn't. I hope he does, but he hasn't yet. And you just never know where people are going to go with that. And they're like, so what do you want to know? And I spent hours there, and they sent me home with scrapbooks from Brett's life. And they're just like, it's funny because I was driving home and my wife is like, don't you think it's weird that they talk to you
right.
and Brett hasn't talked to you?
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard to explain, but there's something about, I got this when I did Walter Payton because he's from Mississippi too. There's something about showing up and taking the time to talk and asking questions and being honest and being upfront where it's almost like, yeah, we'll talk to you because you showed up and you're here. Would you like a lemonade or a soda? You know, like it's that sort of thing. And they're not, there's this whole perception, I think, oh, Mississippi, backwards. Like, these are savvy people. They're smart people. Benita was a special ed teacher for years and years. It just kind of felt like, well, the guy showed up, so let's talk to him. And I got the same from his brothers. They were great. His sister was great. Aunts, uncles, nephews, great. They're just like a really nice family. That's just a really good people.
I want to learn more about Brett Favre's childhood. Tell us, what was it like and what were some of the stories that his siblings did share?
Yeah, so he, you know, he grew up in a very rural background in Pekin, Mississippi. It's spelled K-I-L-N, but everyone there calls it Pekin, Mississippi. And he grew up on this long road, Irving Favre Lane. I think it's Lane or Drive, and that's Irving Favre is his father. And the funny thing is the name is misspelled on the street sign, and he never replaced it. It's spelled F-A-R-V-E, not F-A-V-R-E. So they kind of grew up isolated, and they used to just beat the snot out of each other, you know, and I asked Brandy, his sister, so what was Brett like? And her first word was mean. And I'm like, ha ha, mean. Like, you know, my brother and I were mean to each other. She's like, no. Like, mean. Like, hit you in the head with a brick.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, rip off the head of your dolls and laugh at you. Like, pee in a cup, mix it with Tabasco sauce and make you drink it. Like, that level of mean.
Wow.
And, you know, they were raised by a really tough disciplinarian father. And my favorite story from their childhood, it's a great one, is I don't know how old Brett was, maybe 10, and he's riding his bike on Irving Favre the road, and he gets his jeans stuck in his spokes. And his dad is driving down the road to leave the comp of the property, and Brett tries hailing him down to help him, and he just drives by. And when he drives by, the car passes, and Brett flips the bird, middle finger, to his dad. But he doesn't think his dad sees, but his dad pumps on the brakes and puts the car in reverse. And you have to picture it. Brett is like, his leg is stuck in his bike spoke, and he's running away, dragging the bike in his jeans, trying to get away from his dad. And his dad catches him, gets out of the truck, catches him, bends his finger back and says, do you have something to say to me? What were you trying to say to me? What was that you were trying to say? Like, that was kind of his dad. Like, take no guff kind of, you know, tough guy. Yeah, but, you know, kind of made him the athlete he was. Like, made him very tough, very rugged, very determined.
Well, the chapter on Brett Favre's father, I mean, I thought it was very eye-opening. He was hardly the All-American, you know, father and husband, and obviously just the example that you gave. I mean, he was a drunk, and he was a prolific womanizer.
Yeah, he was, every now and then when you write a biography and you research, there are things you find out that you wish you never knew.
It was very disappointing, I have to tell you. I had no idea.
It's weird, right?
Yes.
Because you're like, people think, this is really true, I swear to God on this, people think when you're writing a book, you find out quote-unquote dirt on people, and you're happy. And it's, I swear to God, it is just the opposite. Because you find out stuff, and then you think, do I need to use this to be definitive? You know what I mean? Like, do I need to do this, to use this to tell an honest story of a person? And If I were talking about his second cousin or his uncle, it's a non-factor. But you're talking about the man who is the major role model in Brett Favre's life, the man who raised him, developed him, the man who he idolized. So when you find out that he wasn't the best husband, that he, you know, he was the guy at the bar who the woman, the waitress walks by and he pinches her, you know, that kind of guy, it's kind of disappointing, but it is so telling and so sort of important in his development that you kind of, you just have to write about it. You just try to do it in a gentle sort of way.
New York Times bestselling author of the new Brett Favre definitive biography. It is titled Gunslinger. Jeff Perlman's going to stick around here for another segment after this quick timeout.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to the all-new SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to continue our compelling conversation with Jeff Perlman, who has just released his new book, The Remarkable, Improbable, Iconic Life of Brett Favre. It is titled Gunslinger. Okay, so Jeff, though, when you spent time around his mom with Bonita, I mean, what did she have to share about her husband, about Big Irv?
Well, it's funny. She didn't talk. You know, it's not like she was volunteering information about that. You know, she talked about sort of like, you know, like he was a horrible gift giver, like a horrible gift giver, which I always think is kind of a telling thing. You know, like he would give the same card multiple years. You know, he would just give her money and say, go buy something you like. He wasn't a horrible guy. I don't think he was a horrible guy. No one's black and white. But I think he just wasn't a very attentive husband in that regard, you know. And I called her later on and sort of talked to her about what I found and a little bit about what I felt like I had to write. And she was understanding. I'm telling you, she is maybe the best person I've ever met reporting a book. Wow. She's just really, really unique and understanding. And if you think about it, being Brett Favre's mom, right? So, yeah, you have the good times. You have the Super Bowls and your son is a superstar. Your son also was a Vicodin addict. Your son had alcohol problems. Your son almost died in a car accident. Her older son, Scott, was involved in a DUI where his passenger died. The sister was arrested multiple times. She's a great person, but she had legal problems as well. Then Brett Favre's with the Jets, and it comes out when he's with the Vikings that he was sending pictures of his private parts to a sideline reporter. Like, it has not been easy for her. The women in Favre's life, meaning Deanna, his wife, and Bonita, his mother. These are embarrassing, horrifying episodes that happened that they had to answer for just because they were related to him.
I am just curious because, you know, as I was going through the book, I mean, why do you think she stayed with him?
It's a $1 million question. I would say the number one reason is she is devoutly religious, like a level of Christianity, faith in Christianity that few people, I think, truly have. I mean, she got pregnant with their daughter when they were both college age. So, and she just didn't believe in abortion. So it wasn't even an option for her. They were going to have the girl. And she just, like, she loved him and she believed in him. And she just did not really believe divorce was an option, even after all. I mean, to me, like, the whole thing with the pictures, 99 out of 100 wives are leaving. Don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
I just think 99, like, all right, you cheated on me. A lot of people do survive infidelity, and you had addiction issues. You know what? That's something we'll go through together, right? Drinking, we'll go through that together. But the pictures was just humiliating, and it must have been for her a stab in the heart. And I just think, like, it is a mean thing to do to your wife. You know, it's a mean thing to put that person through.
New York Times bestselling author of 7 books, Jeff Perlman, is with us tonight at the all-new SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are shining the spotlight on his new book, The Remarkable, Improbable, Iconic Life of Brett Favre. It is titled Gunslinger. It is a must-read, a compelling read. Take us through as far as the sudden passing of Brett Favre's father at the age. He was only 58 years of age. It was devastating news. He died of a heart attack. And I'd love for you to share, you know, that Monday Night Football game where Brett Favre played so incredible, and he takes the stage and just really performs a miracle.
You know, I want to give you a compliment first, because we talked before I went on the air, and I told you this is probably my 838th interview, and that it gets tiring, but these are really good questions, and I really appreciate that you know the book.
Oh,
I know that
you.
Sounds dumb, but I really do.
Thank you.
Yeah, because a lot of people don't, you know, they don't have time to read it, and they ask off the sheet, which I understand, but this really is meaningful to me. Yeah, it's amazing. So, you know, for all the flaws that Favre had, he was still Brett Favre's dad, and Brett absolutely loved the man. And the Packers are in Oakland, and Brett's playing golf with Ryan Longwell and Doug Peterson in Oakland. And Deanna calls Peterson's phone, I think it was, with the news that Irvin Favre had had a heart attack and drove off the road and died. And I actually found the woman. This was just pure sort of timing luck. I found the woman who was in the car behind him wow. when he died. And she actually ran up to the car and was the first one there when he drove off the road. And, you know, he didn't take good care of himself. That's another thing about Irvin. He didn't believe in going to doctors. He didn't eat healthy. He drank too much. So he dies of a heart attack. Brett finds out, and of course, he's completely and totally devastated. And I interviewed the priest. There was a priest who was with him. The Packers had a priest who traveled with the team. And he spent a lot of time with Brett that afternoon/evening, just sort of praying with him and talking about his dad. And, you know, they talked whether he should play or not play. And at first, Brett was not going to play. The weight of it was just too much. And then he was going to, and then he was uncertain. And the priest told me when he left the room, he was pretty sure Brett wasn't going to play. And then they had a team meeting that night in a barroom in the hotel in Oakland. And Brett asked Mike Sherman, the coach, if he could address the team. He basically said, you know, to paraphrase, my dad loved football and he would want me to play. And I'm playing for him, but I'm also playing for you guys because I love this team and I believe in you guys. So I'm going to do it for you and for my dad. And, you know, before the game, the receivers all met and sort of agreed, made this pact that whatever Favre threw up in the air, they would get. Like, they were going to get every ball because there was people love, that's the thing. People loved Brett Favre. Uh-huh. He was not a disliked teammate. He was a beloved teammate in Green Bay for most of his years there, an absolutely beloved teammate who crossed racial lines, who crossed age lines. He really was. So the game begins. And he's throwing up these passes that are really high and really wide. And if you watch the tape, like Javon Walker made some of the all-time Lynn Swan-esque catches at.
Oh, yeah, I watched
amazing.
It. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, amazing. And I'll tell you a really cool, really nugget from it is the sideline reporter on Monday Night Football just that year was Lisa Guerrero.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah, and I've known Lisa for a long time because we used to cover baseball together. At the same time, and I'd see her at different games in California. And I talked to Lisa. And she said she's on the sideline, and the Packers media team told her, Brett won't be doing interviews, so don't even ask, he's not going to be doing interviews. Of course, her job is to get that interview with Brett. So she's on the sideline, it's a fourth quarter, and she kind of tiptoes up to Brett when he comes to get some water. And she says, hey, Brett, is there any chance you'll talk to me after the game? And he says, yeah, okay. And she said, promise? Mm-hmm. He said, yeah, I promise. And the Packers media staff was livid. And she gets Brett, and it was Lisa's, I would say Lisa's finest moment yes. that season was her interviewing Brett Favre as he's near tears immediately after that game. And the emotion of that moment is something I think that is attached to Favre's legacy forever.
Yeah, didn't she say something like, it's one thing to play with a broken thumb, but to play with yeah. a broken heart?
Yeah, it was such, seriously, it was a spontaneous line that
was
incredible.
So good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was so good.
It
yeah.
was. So how do you think, you know, the passing of his father, I mean, how did that change Brett, or did it, or was it years later? It seems like he's kind of had a spiritual renaissance when you watch the Hall of Fame speech.
I think it definitely made him reflect on, you know, mortality and sort of loss and what's important and what's not important. I mean, I've seen this with a lot of athletes where you get to this level of fame where you sort of overrate your own importance and you forget that what you do is throw a round ball or, you know, an oblong ball in the air and you get paid lots of money to do it. And then suddenly when you have something like this sort of close person die to you, it certainly makes you reflect and think about who you are and where you stand and what's important to you. So I think that was the number one thing it provided for him was a real sort of chance to look at himself in the mirror and ask himself who he was.
So much more I'd love to get into with Jeff Perlman, New York Times bestselling author. This is a beauty. You definitely got to go out and get a copy of it. The Remarkable, Improbable, Iconic Life of Brett Favre. It is titled Gunslinger. You've got to have it in your library. Congratulations, Jeff. We look forward to another conversation. Look us up when you are in the great city of Houston, okay?
All right. Thank you so much.
You bet. Much more coming your way right here at the all-new SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Elissa Walker-Campbell. The Big East Sports Show continues at the all-new SB Nation Radio. And now we are going to focus our attention on some college football talk. We're going to preview the number one team in the country. That, of course, is the Alabama Crimson Tide as they are on the road at Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge. They are set to face those 5-2 LSU Tigers. It is time now to open up the Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line with our good friend from ESPN Radio. He is going to be making the call. That is Bill Rosinski.
Hey, Alyssa, how you doing?
Hey, Bill, it's good to have you on with us. And it sure seems like when Alabama and LSU, these two teams, get together in the month of November, it doesn't feel like a normal game. I mean, there's a lot of hype, a lot of emotions leading up to it. I'm sure you're fired up.
Oh, yeah. This should be really interesting. I did the LSU game at when they hosted Ole Miss a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
And there was a, you know, there's a belief. There's an energy with this LSU team now that Ed Orgeron has taken over as head coach, and there's an excitement in Baton Rouge and in Louisiana about what this team might be able to accomplish, not just Saturday, but maybe for the rest of the season. It's funny, I did an impartial poll going out to dinner and then coffee the next day before the game, asking, because there seems to be this love-in with Orgeron.
Okay.
And then I asked fans, I said, you really love the guy, right? And they go, yep, as long as he keeps on winning. So we'll see if the love-in continues after Saturday night.
Yeah, no pressure for Ed. Okay, so the play-by-play voice for ESPN Radio, college football, Bill Rosinski, is with us tonight at the all-new SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. And Bill, let me ask you this. In all your years of calling college football games, what is it like to be in Baton Rouge on game day and with this Alabama-LSU rivalry?
Well, it's always special because the stadium seats 102,000 plus.
That's crazy. And, wow.
Yeah, and for night games, that gives the local populace ample time to, tailgate, gear up for the contest. So it's something special. It's a madhouse sometimes, and I can't imagine what it'll be like when LSU takes the field against Alabama. It's going to be really something special.
So what are your expectations coming into this game? Do you think it's going to be close? Do you think it's going to be a blowout?
Well, I hope it's close. If you're a broadcaster going into a national game, you just want it close. You don't want a blowout. If it's a blowout, it would be for Alabama's favor, obviously. I think the big key in this game, you know, Danny Etling was moved into the starting quarterback position. And between Etling and Orgeron's, kind of the way they've changed things with their offense, they're getting receivers in space. There is a threat to throw the football. There's a threat to throw the football deep and make big plays. And I think if LSU's going to have any chance, Alyssa, to win this game, it's going to be for Etling to make some plays early down the field against this Alabama defense, which we have seen this year, as good as this team is, and no question they're the best team in the country right now, they give up plays in the secondary in the passing game. We saw it from Ole Miss. We saw it from other teams they've played this year. But somehow, some way, Alabama finds a way to win. So I think Etling's going to have to do that. And if he can, then, you know, Leonard Fournette is back. He had a huge game against Ole Miss when we did that game. I'm looking at his numbers here, 16 carries.
Wow.
284 yards, 3 touchdowns. And is the guy that took his place, well, Fournette was kind of banged up this year. Darius Geis is no slouch either. Because last year, if you remember, Alyssa, they shut down Fournette. Mm-hmm. And there was no passing game, so they had no chance. I think Etling's the key. He's got some pretty good receivers. So if they can protect him, and as I said, get the ball in space, make some defensive backs miss, it'll be an interesting game.
He's going to be on the call, Alabama-LSU, Bill Rosinski for ESPN Radio, who's joining us tonight at the all-new SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. You break down some of the keys for LSU to pull off an upset. I think it's going to be very important, too, Bill, to win the first quarter. You got to get that momentum going in your direction right from the start. You cannot ease into that game.
No, you can't. It's a matter of getting those 102,000 into it early. And it'll be interesting to see if LSU wins the toss, if they want to go on defense first, because this defense is pretty stout. They've got some really good corners on this team. They've got Arden Keyes, one of the top linebackers in the country, the guys up front. I mean, they've only given up an average of 15 points a game, so they can play defense. And it's not like this Alabama team, you know, lights it up offensively every once in a while. The key for this, you know, when you look at this team this year, They have scored a bunch of touchdowns, 12 this year, 12 touchdowns scored, not by the offense. They've had four interceptions for scores, five fumble returns for a touchdown, and three punt returns for touchdowns. That's incredible. So anytime you think you're in a game or might have the edge on Alabama, the defense or special teams make a play. So there's a chance LSU's defense is going to come out and be stout. And I think, you know, early on you talk about that first quarter. I think LSU probably would love to go out on defense first and maybe give their, you know, quarterback a chance for, you know, decent field position if they can stop Alabama early. And then we'll see what happens from there. But you're right, first 15 minutes could be huge, especially for LSU.
Okay, so LSU coming into this game, they're on a three-game win streak. Do you think they made the right decision by, you know, separating their ways with Les Miles? What have you heard?
Well, I think the right decision should have been made at the end of last year. Okay. It was just one of these deals where they were very stubborn offensively. They needed a spark. They needed something to turn this team around. And Orgeron has done this. And you remember what Ed did at USC.
Okay, you bet.
He was, what, 6-2, I think, at USC when he filled in when Lane Kiffin got fired. So, Orgeron's fighting for his job. He has done a great – he's one of the great recruiters. He's a great coach. Is he a head coach? There's still a lot of skeptics out there. So I think this is a big game for him. You know, maybe they don't beat Alabama at home on Saturday night, but if they can play him tough, I think this will go a long way for him to get his job. But they have done – the offensive numbers have improved tremendously, especially with the wide receivers since the switch in coaching.
Do you think he will eventually get that LSU job? Or what about even, you know, hey, talking about Alabama, what about Lane Kiffin? I mean, who would be the best coach for this position?
Well, Ed's a native. Ed's a Cajun.
That's
so
right.
So he would certainly be the perfect guy. But as those fans told me, Alyssa, just keep on winning. So, is Orgeron the right guy? Some people will tell you no. He's a good stopgap. He's a guy who can come in and, you know, put his finger in the dam and stop the leak and, you know, right the ship. But is he a guy for the long term? Didn't work out at Ole Miss for him. But you know what? Bill Belichick wasn't exactly the coach of the year with the Browns. And then he got the next opportunity with New England, and we see what he's done there in the NFL. So maybe if Orgeron is given another chance, he can get this head coaching job. This game will go a long way in deciding that, I think.
He is back with us from ESPN Radio. He's going to be on call for LSU and Alabama. Bill Rozinski's with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And, you know, Bill, while we have you on the program tonight, I want to get your reaction to the latest college football rankings. Alabama, Clemson, Michigan, and Texas A&M, they lead the first college football playoff rankings. Do you agree?
Well, I think the only thing I would have changed is maybe put Washington in at number four.
You would have, okay.
Yeah, I've seen Washington. We have their game next week. They've got USC next week in Seattle, so we're actually doing that game. So we had their game against Stanford, and say what you will about Stanford, they're not having a good year. They dominated Stanford. I mean, they dominated Oregon, and I know the, you know, you look at the, you know, the strength of schedule now compared to what it looked like at the beginning of the season, but still they're playing some really solid football. They won on the road last week at Utah, had a big punt return late in the game to seal that one. They've got Cal this week, but you know, to me, it's, and I knew when they started this, Alyssa, I knew as soon as we had the first ranking, we would never focus on who's one, two, or three. We'd be looking at four, because we want to see who's closest to getting in there. And I think the first couple of years is telling us if things play out the way they do, for example, for Texas A&M, they've already lost to Alabama. If Alabama runs the table, Texas A&M's not getting in the SEC championship game. And Washington still has a chance. I think if Washington wins out, and I think this was said on the show on ESPN the other night, if the Huskies win out, which includes a win over USC, a Pac-12 championship, then I think if they're undefeated and a conference champion, they would certainly have my vote to be one of the four teams.
Hey, we're getting you ready for Alabama LSU with the play-by-play voice for ESPN Radio, Bill Rozinski. He's been joining us right here at SB Nation Radio. Don't go away.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to the all-new SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And I tell you what, it's a big weekend for college football. We are so delighted to have with us tonight, right here at SB Nation, Bill Rozinski. He's the play-by-play voice for ESPN College Football Radio, and he is going to be on call for Alabama-LSU. Be sure, if you missed any of our interview tonight, you can go to podcastarena.com, and also we love to hear from all of our listeners out there across the country. Join us at Twitter, at E-Radio Sports. Here's Bill Rozinski.
Okay, so it's interesting, Bill, because, you know, coming into the 2016 season, some said that the SEC, the conference as a whole, might be down, but not according to this College Football Playoff Committee. I mean, obviously, with Alabama and Texas A&M being in that top four.
Yeah, and, you know, Auburn has surprised some people this year. They've suddenly turned their season around. We did the Florida-Georgia game last week, and as disappointing as Georgia has been this season, all of a sudden Florida, that defense, my goodness, they are really good. They're going to keep people in games, and if Del Rio can, you know, somehow manage the offense and make a few plays, Florida's going to be tough down the stretch. But if you're, you know, you still look at that East and you're going, okay, Tennessee's not what we thought they were. Georgia is not. Looks like Florida's the team. Does Florida have any chance against Alabama if they play in the SEC championship game? I don't know. I don't see that happening. So the power is still in the West, and we're not talking a lot about LSU right now, but they still have Florida coming into Baton Rouge in a couple of weeks, that makeup game. So the West is still where it is in the SEC.
You know, it's interesting. I listened to you on that call, the game with Florida, and obviously with that win, they're 6-1, 4-1 in the SEC, 24-10 win. How close do you think that they are, the Gators? You're talking about just how stout they are defensively, but how close are they being in the hunt for a title?
Well, the offense still needs. Del Rio is an okay quarterback. They have to establish some more of a run game. Their defense is going to keep them in games. Their defense dominated against Georgia, and the field position, the start, you know, the average field position start was absolutely ludicrous. Georgia was always starting a drive on their 8-yard line, 10-yard line. Florida was, I think they started four or five drives inside the 50. A lot of it because of that defense. I don't know if they have the offense right now to contend against anybody in the West to win an SEC title.
We're wrapping up our time with from ESPN Radio, Bill Rozinski, who's joining us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He's getting set for the big call, Alabama-LSU. We are in Big 12 Conference country. I mean, what's kind of the perception out there? What are folks saying about the Big 12 Conference and how the teams have performed so far this year?
Well, I think, you know, Oklahoma State has played really well, and of course they have that one bogus loss on their schedule, which shouldn't have been a loss, but the officials blew the call.
They sure did. Yep.
A loss. Big win over West Virginia. We actually have Oklahoma, West Virginia in a few weeks in Morgantown.
Nice. Okay.
And we just keep lining up big games. I don't know how that happened, but
you have the best job on the planet, Bill. I'm telling you.
I think, you know, and then, you know, Baylor struggled against Texas. I think the consensus right now is Oklahoma, and we've done Oklahoma this year, and I think that team, well coached by Bob Stoops, solid offense. Uh-huh. Mayfield's a great quarterback. I think they're the team right now. I think Oklahoma, you know, unfortunately, the loss to Houston was not, you know, that looks even worse now with the way Houston's playing. And then the you know, Ohio State beat them pretty good, and the Buckeyes have lost a game this year. So, of the teams in the Big 12, I think Oklahoma right now is playing the best football. You know, if they can win a conference, you know, if they can win the title, I don't know. I think they're out. To be honest with you, I just don't think there's a way a Big 12 team makes it unless some really bizarre things happen to get into the Final Four.
Okay, and speaking of out, you think Charlie Strong, you think he'll be back in 2017? Will he remain?
Oh, geez. You know, what are the boosters thinking this week? I don't know. I would give the guy, I hate the knee-jerk reaction to, you know, a guy gets a job for a couple of years. You know, give him a chance. Give him a chance to recruit, to get the people in place that he wants. to the system that he wants, and they need time. But we're such a knee-jerk reaction, especially on social media when things go wrong, that people who do the hiring hear all this stuff. So I really don't know.
I hate to jump in here, but I thought the season would be so different for the Longhorns after that impressive overtime win against Notre Dame to kick off the season.
Yeah, well, now let's look at Notre Dame. How impressive was it?
Right.
They aren't very good either, which is, I'm glad the committee, at least at this point, puts their own rankings together. I think the big change among like AP was how high they had Penn State ranked based on the win over Ohio State. I think there was a big difference between what the AP voters think and what the committee thinks. I like this. Originally, Alyssa, the committee was only going to come out with one poll, and that was at the end of the year.
Okay.
And ESPN decided, we need to make a show. We need more than that out of you guys. So that's why they come out. They decided to come out, maybe halfway through the season and start telling us what they think. And as we've learned from those guys, conference championships mean a lot. Strength of schedule means a lot. So, but again, back to Texas, the win over Notre Dame got people excited, but now what you see with Notre Dame's put up since then, maybe it wasn't that big a deal.
Bill Rozinski has been with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. You can check him out. The big call this weekend, Alabama, LSU, safe travels. And we look forward to another conversation. Thank you so much, Bill.
Sure, Alyssa, anytime.
You bet. That, of course, was Bill Rozinski from ESPN Radio. A very special thank you to all of our guests and our lineup. Be sure and join us every Friday night from 8 to 10 Eastern Time right here at the all-new SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. And perhaps you're just tuning in and you missed one of our interviews. You can go to podcastarena.com, and listen in. And also join us at Twitter, at eRadioSports. Don't drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports. The fastest 2 hours in radio, the Big E Sports Show.